Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's episode is a special episode within our Back to School series, as we are highlighting, I like to say, districts that are moving the needle with students, specifically strategically using different softwares and product and also solutions to be able to expedite this level of synergy when it comes to providing access and opportunity to our students. And within our Back to School series, we are highlighting the great work that Austin Independent School District in Austin, Texas is doing. And they're also utilizing I want to say that I'm biased and I'm subjective with this because I have seen the Riverside Insights product, both as an executive leader and now in this business education role, how they are impacting student lives across the country, across the globe, we should say, from this aspect of moving away from looking at specific, I like to say, linear metrics or measures of achievement, where now we're broadening it out to looking at students from an ability and a strength-based measure. So we're going to be talking about how Austin Independent School District has underscored the COGAT to provide opportunity and access and really have a deep thought leadership discussion with two of the individuals that are leading this within Austin Independent School District. I'd like to introduce Mr. Cody Pruitt. I've been talking to Cody for a while. We actually had, I like to say, an unofficial podcast episode with a conversation that we had, just understanding and underscoring the COGAT. Then we're going to get deeper in that with the COGAT and how that was utilized within Austin Independent School District. But Cody Pruitt is the Advanced Academic Coordinator for Advanced Placement and International Baccalaureate Programs for Austin Independent School District. And we also, too, have Mr. Blake Haygood, who is the Advanced Academic Coordinator for K-12 Gifted and Talented Programs. And of course, I'm going to bring in my friend, my partner in crime. I've done a lot of presentations with him. Just absolutely love him down in the San Antonio area in Texas. Tony Kajija, who is the Senior Strategic Partnership Manager for Riverside Insights. So Cody, Blake, Tony, welcome to Voices for Excellence within our Back to School series. Wanted to highlight this work because not only I want to just be able to talk about how we can utilize or how to utilize COGAT in this tool, but we're also going to talk about the impact as well with regards to your students. But Cody and Blake, welcome to VFE. Tony, of course, good to see you, my friend, and welcome to VFE.
Great to see you, Michael.
Thanks for having us, Dr. Connor.
Yeah, great to be here.
Absolutely. So Cody, Blake, and Tony, I just want to let you know there really isn't a structure to this, right? So this is kind of like a free-flowing conversation. I know when people see podcasts, you know, they figure there's all this structure, but no, just imagine that we're sitting outside of the Riverwalk. We're going to go to Riverwalk for San Antonio because of Tony, or somewhere downtown in Austin, Texas. We're just sitting outside enjoying the weather, not now in Texas, because I know it's about 90 degrees and the humidity is crazy, but like a December conversation, January conversation outside amongst friends, amongst colleagues, having a cup of coffee. So are we ready for this podcast recording?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cody and Blake, I want to start out with a fun question with you, okay? And this is pertaining to, you know, a song that describes you, your impact in the education ecosystem, specifically in Austin Independent School District. But for leaders that do not know Austin Independent School District, the initiatives, the innovative practices and systems that you are employing specifically now for linear for our conversation with regards to underscoring the COGAT within your various departments. But for my audience that do not know Austin Independent School District and you, Cody and Blake, what song describes the work that is being underscored to impact student outcomes for all? And Cody or Blake, whoever can go first.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and go first. Michael, I love this question. I actually came to Austin for the live music about 20 years ago. So yeah, I think this is a great way to start. So there was an all-woman country supergroup a couple of years ago called The High Woman. It was a play on the Highwaymen, and they had a song called Crowded Table. And the hook was, I want to dine at a crowded table. You've got so many friends and family members that you really care about and want to, you know, commune with, that you're running out of space. And I think the best thing that we can do for students at any level is give them the burden of too many options. And I think Austin ISD is very good at giving that to students. There's options at different campuses, different grades, for them to challenge themselves at different ways and have different avenues of success, and to bring as many students as possible to a crowded table that everyone wants to be at, to help each other grow and learn from each other.
Yeah, great. Blake, do you have a song?
I have watched a couple of your episodes, so I was a little prepared. But then in terms of what Austin ISD is doing currently, all I could think was, I recently heard Stevie Wonder's Pastime Paradise for the first time just a few months ago. And I mean, of course, like, it's been sampled so many times, but yeah, I had no idea. It just blew me away. But it really hit for me because, you know, Austin ISD values all the students in spite of political barriers, financial barriers. And all the educators that we work with here in Austin keep pushing for that future paradise that Stevie sings about. In spite of huge challenges, Austin has a history of segregation that's, you know, it's been trying to dig itself out of since the late 20s. Just either side of 35, there've been a lot of issues there. And then political things, of course, I don't really need to get into, I'm sure. But aside from that, we lose 3 times more to recapture than Houston ISD. So, you know, we paid back around $8 billion to the state since 2000. And, you know, I think last year it was estimated something like $800 million that had to get sent back to recapture. So, you know, in spite of these barriers and forces trying to pull us back into that pastime paradise, quote unquote, you know, looking for excellence in our kids like this is a way to push back.
Yeah. And Blake and Cody, some of the, and what I'm doing is essentially interfacing the themes from both of your responses. And Cody, when we talk about crowded table with options and presenting challenges and individual success, I think that it becomes an essential imperative, or I like to say an educational imperative, when we look at the context now of providing options, individual options, so that students can define individual success. And what I like about that, when we talk about individual success, and we're going to get into how you implemented the COGAT, where now individual success is not measured by a linear achievement metric or measure, right, that we're looking beyond just the scope of academic success. And I really, and you can tell by the work that you're underscoring in Austin Independent School District, that you are providing those opportunities, the necessary rigor and success for each individual student. And then Cody, it underscores your critical themes from your response with regards to this level of eliminating barriers, whether it be political or financial barriers. How do we navigate through, I like to say, these conundrums that are inevitable in the AC stage of education after COVID-19 to ensure that we're reaching individual success and providing those options for our students. That's why I wanted to have you on VFB to be able to talk about this, because again, Blake and Cody, you know, you've done some, and I've heard the success stories, saw the metrics, Tony has shared them with me, and I was like, wow, we got to be able to elevate the story to get this out so that we can be able to impact critical mass. But based on your work with the COGAT, first, before we even get into the question itself, Blake and Cody, can you just unpack for my audience what the COGAT is, how Riverside Insights has provided that for you? But again, I know that, and I know the COGAT very intimately as well, when we look at this verbal, quantitative, and nonverbal domains that we look at, and percentiles that extend beyond just a pure achievement percentile standpoint, but we're looking at the student holistically. What is the COGAT, Cody and Blake, for level setting with our audience? And then we'll go deeper into the question.
Sure, that's a great question. I guess I can discuss my part of it, and then I think Blake can add on anything that I miss. We both got quite a bit of experience there. So the COGAT is the cognitive ability test that measures student ability in verbal, nonverbal, and quantitative reasoning. And I think one of the key elements of the COGAT, as I understand it, is to be subject and content agnostic as much as possible to really measure a student's ability to problem solve, to make connections in this content, regardless of what they've been exposed to at school, at home, and really just measuring their innate abilities as much as possible against students of their age and grade range. And a lot of times that has been used, especially in the state of Texas, to identify students with the potential for giftedness. And that is certainly not the primary function of the COGAT. And I think we're going to talk about other functions of the COGAT here in a second when we talk about how we test our newcomers with it. But that's its primary use currently in the state. That is my experience with it. So, yeah, I'll encourage Blake to add anything I might have missed in that description.
Yeah, I can add to it just from the GT perspective. It is a low-cost solution for helping identify GT students in public education. In Austin ISD in particular, we cast a wide net and will identify students in all four core content areas. So a student can get identified for only math as GT. But once they're identified as GT, that's, you know, part of their special population identifier that goes with them through graduation. And it can create pathways and opportunities for them that would otherwise be left out. So it's important for us as a district to have something that can map itself to, you know, the quantitative portion is a good measure for math science. So like a STEM GT identification. And then the verbal is good for the humanities. So an ELA or a social studies identification for us in particular. And then the nonverbal is kind of used as an overarching, you know, general giftedness that can add to that measure as well. So we're basically able to take this one test and pull all of its respective components out to get a very individualized idea of what that gifted student's abilities look like.
Yeah, yeah. And Cody and Blake, now that we created a level set definition for my audience with regards to the three different assessments that are embedded within the COGAT, how have you now with this, right? And we're going to follow up with how you're impacting underrepresented student groups, as well as what I call an extension of underrepresented student groups is disenfranchised student groups historically from the system itself. But how have you changed the systems, the conditions, and more importantly, the mindsets to look at students beyond, let's say, a state assessment percentile, or let's say a specific norm that might be within an iReady or NWEA? How are you getting your practitioners and leaders to look beyond that specific measure, but moreover, how are you changing systems and conditions of learning for students?
So the initiative that I think has really kind of moved the needle on you know, changing systems and conditions and mindsets recently is using the COGAT test to assess our international high school students. So as I mentioned before, the COGAT has primarily been used as an identification tool for gifted and talented students, which wasn't its initial purpose. At my previous district, I was having conversations with our multilingual coordinator, and we began to realize that when these newcomers to the country come to the U.S., a lot of times the district, the campus might make assumptions about their abilities based on their newcomer status and place them initially at basic classes in all subjects as they acclimate to U.S. schools. So our conversation became, what if we use that cognitive abilities test minus the verbal section, because that's offered in English, to learn more about their ability levels and place them in courses more appropriate to their levels of ability instead of assuming that ability based on wherever they were coming from. And so Tony spread that conversation to Austin ISD. And in that time, I got a job with Austin ISD. So when I came over here, essentially they said, hey, that work that you were doing over there is now happening over here. So that's when Blake and I were able to just continue that initiative pretty seamlessly. And we tested the students at International High School using the COGAT exam. And I think more than changing the mindset of teachers or administrators, what it really did was change the mindset of the students themselves. Because the teachers and the counselors were excited. They were grateful that we were there and they knew and saw that potential. But sharing that with students is that they kind of showed that academic ability and that potential beyond their age was really surprising to them. And one of the students that we talked about, this student scored very squarely in the GT range and was, I think, the second highest general scorer of all of the students that we tested. And that student's plans after sophomore year, after finishing at International High School, were to drop out and to join the workforce so that they could support their family. And while Blake and I aren't in a position to counsel that student directly, we could give that information to his teachers, to his counselors, to say, hey, there is a ton of academic potential that you might not have been aware of, and hopefully have those conversations that change a student's trajectory and how they see themselves and their place in our schools.
That's absolutely phenomenal, Cody, because when you think about it, and I always say this, you breathe confidence in a kid, the sky's the limit, right? And when you have a confident kid, their approach to engage in, I like to say, intentional rigor, intentional critical thinking, and placing them based off of their strengths, not just purely a metric or a benchmark cut score. And that changes the conversation, right? And when we think about it, changes the conversation amongst, whether it be practitioners or leaders, now the conversation is focused on the actual ability of the student and the potential. That right there is, I like to say this, Cody and Blake, is a radical culture shift, right? But when you think about this, we still have the achievement norms, achievement benchmarks that, you know, whether it be state guidelines we have to be able to meet, or whether it be internal norms based off of our normative reference assessments that we're administering within their multiple measures, right? Using multiple measures within this, I like to say, statistical conglomerate to look at students to put them on that pathway of success, as you talked about, Cody and Blake, at the outset, right? But this took time, right? And because when you think about it, culture eats strategy. You can have the best strategy in the world, but if culture is not aligned to that strategy, then that whole strategy and articulating that will fall apart. So you had to align mental models to shift these conversations because, again, historically, education, as we know, right, W. Edward Deming stated this, every system is perfectly designed for the outputs that it gets, right? So when we think about, when we talk about achievement, we have a model that's aligned to just purely achievement, not to talk about potential and the ability of our students. How was it, Cody and Blake, disrupting these traditional practices, or I should say, Blake, for you, how was it disrupting these traditional practices with unpacking multiple measures within your assessment model, shift this, I always like to say, compliance-driven practice, or I should say compliance-driven practices, of placement to now this broad panoramic lens of your students? I'm very intrigued on that, Blake.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were really fortunate at our international high school to have a cohort of teachers who ended up helping us give this assessment, who were very invested in the kids that they served. So they were there for, you know, the intention of supporting these new to country students. They believed in them. So that was, you know, foundationally the very first thing we needed. But, you know, from the perspective of gifted and talented coordinator, I was really fired up to screen our new to country students, because otherwise we know that these students probably would have never been referred for GT testing. Even with professional learning that we provide very heavily, every single offering that we have goes into characteristics of gifted learners, emergent bilingual gifted learners, twice exceptional learners, these students who tend to be missed at the elementary level. But even with that, most identification, I think across the country, tends to happen at K-5, because that's when the ones that are obvious get noticed. So this is the one opportunity maybe that these kids would have to get identified for these abilities or potentials. So aside from that, we know that the International High School is a place for new students to acclimate, and then they disaggregate to their, you know, their future campuses at other places in the district based on where they live. So the bigger picture, and I think we'll talk about this in a little bit, is COGAT's original intent was to provide an ability test that could follow these students, regardless of whether they get it identified for GT, to their next school so that those future teachers and those caregivers can see like what those potentials are and give them appropriate placement. And we know that without, you know, something like the COGAT, largely these students would be unknown quantities.
Yeah.
They would just go unseen. And then just to add to your question about shifting compliance-driven practices, not only were we able to find a lot of students who had a gifted and talented need, we also in Austin ISD have a unique talent pool program. It's called Talent Explore. And students who didn't quite qualify for GT services, but who still showed a lot of potential to have that growth and maybe eventually be identified, were identified for Talent Explore as well. And they also receive supports through automatic scheduling into advanced courses in their areas of strength. So it's, you know, it's like a layered impact to try to create a school to success pipeline, you know, as opposed to the alternative.
Yeah. And Blake and Cody, I have a sub question, and this is more getting down to kind of like a degree of a sentiment analysis, or even to the level of sensitivity analysis right here. Cody, this question's sub question is for you, just based off of Blake's question response. I apologize. And then Blake, I want to get back to you. Can you define, Cody, defined access in the context of AP, Advanced Placement, and International Baccalaureate, IB, specifically for underrepresented students or underrepresented populations in the ecosystem? And I want to extend it to disenfranchised student groups and populations in the education ecosystem, but specifically for Austin ISD, how do you define access with AP and IB with these two student segments? And Blake, the question is going to come to you, so you might as well just listen to Cody first, okay? Is how do you define gifted in the context of access and opportunity for underrepresented population and disenfranchised population? But Cody, if we can go back to you, define what that word is, underscoring the COGAT.
Yeah, that's a great question, Michael. And one that I think guides a lot of the work that I do in AP, right? That ideally we have a representation index in our AP programs that is identical to the representation of our district itself, right? So that we have our Black students taking the AP courses and exams at the same rate as they are represented in our population. Same with our Hispanic students. We don't see that to be the case. And that's not the case anywhere in the United States, and is has been an issue with College Board. So when we talk about access, it's not just the question, can disenfranchised students take an AP course? Because the answer is yes. That would be an easy way to put that question to rest. But the question that we need to ask ourselves is, can a student take that course? Have their courses before that, has their campus before that, their middle school, their elementary school experience prepared them to stay in that course and succeed in that course? And is the teacher teaching that course prepared to give them an AP experience that will allow them to get the college credit that the AP course is named after? You can have an AP course. It's called AP. It's the hardest course in the school. It gets them a bump on their GPA, and it does not prepare them for the AP exam. And in those situations, we're still doing those students a disservice. They haven't gotten access to the success that they need for that college credit on the AP exam. So access to me looks like all of those things. Not only are students taking that those courses, but have they been prepared for those courses? And are they continuing in that course to receive the support that they need to be successful in the way of that their peers on the other side of town or at another campus are also receiving?
Great, great, great answer. Blake, if you want to follow up with that as well, really love that because, and my rationale, Blake and Cody, for asking this question is because a student like me, I had to fight for access. My parent had a, my mother had to fight for access for rigor, for AP, to be able to be a part of some of these specific programs where this is the antithesis of my personal experience, where now we're seeing system structures, stakeholders, leaders facilitating access and opportunity where it wasn't there for me. So Blake, go right ahead with that, because Blake, I'm gonna be honest with you, and this has been, this is great to hear this. I always challenge the word gifted, because I always say that every single student is gifted in their own individual way, hence why I'm such an advocate for the COGAT, because it provides that potentiality and strength-based focus for students. And now we got this, we can provide this intentional chasm in our learning organizations to disrupt gifted for access and opportunity. But how do you define that specifically in Austin ISD? I know this is a sub-question, but I really want to go deep into this.
No, and I'm glad to go into it. Just real quick on what Cody was saying with AP and access, something that I really love about Austin ISD is that the only barrier to access to AP classes or advanced classes for any learner is the student's self-efficacy, the potential pathway that they have, and then any cultural barriers, cultural mind shifts that need to happen to help families realize that it is a viable option for their student. Whereas, you know, in the past, those cultures may have been excluded from those types of courses. And Austin, it's totally inclusive. No one can be kept out of an AP class if they want to be in that class. And of course, from there, you know, they still will take an AP test. And that is the determining factor, whether they mastered the content or not. But there's no barrier to them being in the class. And that, you know, kind of as a lead in to your question about GT, I like to reflect on gifted and talented services as, you know, it is a special population. And I know that Texas and a lot of other states are embracing the MTSS model, tiered supports for students with special needs. And GT is a neurodivergence. There is scientific proof that brains of gifted learners are different than the gen ed population. So just from a neurodivergent scientific standpoint, there are quantitative differences in the way that these kids think. But these students are represented proportionally across all populations. There's no evidence to say that, you know, GT favors one group over another. So how do we combat that? We want to make sure that every campus has local norming. We want to make sure that all students are looked at based on their age, experience, and background and their environment, and not, you know, the color of their skin as a determining factor of whether they have access to these services. So something like we did at the International High School allows those students who may normally have missed the opportunity to have access to these tests based solely on referrals to get in front of that test and then get a chance to bubble up and to show their abilities. And when we look at this test on the back end and the committee at the campus makes decisions for whether services are appropriate for the students, they're not in comparison to kids who have been in the country and who have spoken English all their lives. It's going to be in comparison to the kids who have that same background. And we know that that is an appropriate way to find students with those needs. So just going back to the question of giftedness as a definition, I personally don't like the term gifted myself as a, you know, definition for this neurodivergent tendency. I would go back to asynchrony as my defining characteristic. And asynchrony to me is the difference in a student's intellectual, emotional, social, and physical development when it comes to meeting their needs at the campus. So a student who is asynchronous for their intellect may be grade levels ahead in a content area or multiple content areas. And they could be ahead in other areas too. Like physically, they could be the tallest kid in the class. They could be the shortest kid in the class. Socially, they could be, you know, a leader in their group, or they could be, you know, very introverted and not able to get along with any of their peers. Maybe they have behavior issues. Like it just depends. But that defining characteristic for me is asynchrony. So when I talk about highly capable, high ability kids, gift and talented kids, I always go back to that. And the COGAT is a good way to find those kids in the quantitative and nonverbal and verbal areas.
I always say, how do we get rid of labels? Kids do not get rid of labels. I always say that in education, because once we start labeling students, if you follow the theory of behavioral science, teachers, if Blake and Cody are labeled as a gifted and talented student, would there be a high likelihood that they might, that teacher or that district or the systems might treat that student differently from, let's say, a Michael who isn't identified as gifted and talented? But guess what? The COGAT indicators and outputs suggest I am, but we didn't ever have an assessment like a COGAT to say all of our students fall on that level of giftedness. I love your definition of that, Blake. Now, Blake and Cody, in accordance to Dr. Segueras, who is the superintendent of Austin Independent School District, he has strategic priorities that I absolutely love. Operational efficiency, yes. MTSS alignment, yes, yes. And family and community trust. Yes, 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 because those are our most important customers, our family and our students. But now that you are really, I like to say, dismantling and disrupting in this parallelization some of the traditional norms of how systems and instruction and placement has always been, and I like to say, the BC stage of education before COVID-19. Now that you have this with this integration of the COGAT, Blake or Cody, any one of you, this is kind of like a softball lob to you, you know, how are you now going to expand this? And what are some of your, I like to say, system level processes that you are planning for beyond the 25-26 academic year, where now you're creating this alignment in accordance to Dr. Segueras' vision with ability and potential as a core driver for transformation?
I really appreciate that you asked this question next, because it kind of goes right off of what I was saying about MTSS as a support for these gifted learners who have a label that maybe they don't need. You know, I would be happy if MTSS were fully embraced and we could see that tiered supports also impact students who are high ability as well as students with deficits. Unfortunately, the way that MTSS is often embraced is that it's deficit focused, and we want to bring these kids up to tier one is often the phrase that I hear. But we also have kids who really could access content, process, products, and thrive in a learning environment at a higher tier in order to provide additional flexible pacing, depth, complexity to what they're learning. So going back to advanced placement courses, that's a tier two intervention, but it's on the other side. It's an accelerated, like kids are getting credit for a college level course in high school. That's the definition of an accelerated content. That's tier two, but it's tier two for high ability learners. And if we allow access to that tier two intervention, then those kids are allowed to thrive in that environment. And that gets them back to a tier one where we really want them to be. And you have kids who are capable of taking multiple AP classes at the same time and thrive. You have kids who max out on AP classes before they're even out of high school, and they're ready for dual credit that's even above and beyond that kind of thing. So all labels aside, these kids exist. So it's really important to, like you said, disrupt these elements and just make sure that the word gets out that kids of all abilities, there's just that spectrum of abilities. And at some point, the label doesn't matter as long as we fit that instruction and access to the content to each individual student appropriately.
That's a great response. Cody, do you want to follow up with that?
Sure. I think as you already talked about, giftedness itself is a problematic label for a real condition, because it comes loaded with so many preconceived notions. When it comes to the concept of giftedness, we're pushing against some very old assumptions in American education about who is gifted and what it looks like. And we know, IQ tests have a foundation in systemic racism. And the science and the philosophy of what giftedness is has come a long way, but public perception hasn't come as far as like what gifted kids look like, what kind of houses they come from. And then we're also more likely to have middle and upper class parents pushing for their students to be identified because they better understand the implications and potential benefits for their students. So we see an overrepresentation there as well. So one thing that we really try to do in Austin ISD is to expand the awareness of what giftedness looks like so that parents or the teachers, the people referring these students for the exams after that universal second grade screener, if maybe a student didn't take it, they have a better understanding of what it looks like in a multilingual student, what it looks like in a student with a learning disability, or what it looks like for a student who isn't coming from a college educated household that has, those executive functioning supports that just come naturally from students who have parents who went to college. So professional development for teachers and outreach sessions for parents are really crucial, and something that we do in Austin ISD to change the paradigm in our district about what it looks like to be gifted and how that potential exists in all of our students and all of our communities.
What I love about that, Cody, is that you have an actual tool, i.e. the COGAT in the data. So now it eliminates the subjectivity, implicit biases that might be living of what giftedness looks like, what does AP looks like, what does IB look like, to now level set and metrics that are objective, where we can have this conversation about, listen, our multilingual learners, our special education learners, any of our underrepresented populations that belong to student groups, as well as disenfranchised student groups historically in education, there's that level of giftedness. Because you are right, Cody, in the BC stage of education before COVID-19 and rudiments of the AC stage of education, I think that right now, work that Dr. Segura, you, Cody, and Blake, supported by Riverside Insight, you're really defying the traditional norms or the status quo of what AP looks like. Because again, Cody and Blake, I'll tell you this, I would consider myself fairly good in education, but I did not look like giftedness, right? I came in with the baggy clothes. I came in with the Timberland boots. I came in with the high top fade. Yes, I'm giving my age, right? The high top fade. And I didn't come from a traditional, let's say, quote unquote, home that emulates what high level middle class looks like. So automatically I was put in a category because I did not look like giftedness. I did not look like I was here. So Cody and Blake, and to Dr. Segura and the work that you're doing using the COGAT, phenomenal, because giftedness is in everybody. And that's where I think my appetite for education came in at such an early stage, because I always used to say, my mother should not have to go down to the Board of Education and be at my guidance counselor or school counselor. I should say, we used to call them guidance counselors back then, school counselor's office, advocating for classes that I know that I should have been in. But again, Cody and Blake, really now, this kind of goes into our next question, dismantling the status quo, changing the status quo with these underrepresented populations. Cody and Blake, visionary in perspective, where do you see AISD in 3 years if you continue this disruptive, innovative force using the COGAT in Austin?
I think of gifted and talented as a lever for change, because there's actual statute, there's policy around it. There's a state plan for gifted and talented. that says that we're required to identify GT students of all different ages, experiences, and environments. That you have to assess and identify in all populations of the district. And like Cody was saying with AP, we do the same thing in Gifted and Talented, that the representation index, the population of GT, has to be reflective of the campus or district population. So there are requirements within that state plan that are levers for this change that you want to see. And until that state plan changes, which, you know, in today's world, that could change tomorrow and all that good stuff can be taken out, but we're still going to keep going. You know, we're out of compliance if we don't actively look for ability and potential across the district. So that's a great lever that we can use and other districts that are listening to this podcast can use. It's a great excuse to find kids. For the next 3 years, so we wanted a federal Javits grant that we're fortunately able to continue in today's climate through the grant's completion. We have about a little less than 3 more years on it. So your questions align with that perfectly. But since then, we've done a second grade screener of all kids across the district to allow them access to the COGAT so that no student is missed when it comes to that access. That chance for them to show what they are capable of on this COGAT test. So we have that going for us. We've also moved, a lot of districts kind of get hung up on just identification. And then it's like, now what do we do with these kids who have this high ability? So we don't want to overemphasize identification. So we've also built a lot of professional learning structures in place for identifying students from these different backgrounds, experiences, different cultures, language, economic differences. We do a lot of training on twice exceptionality, students with other learning needs or learning differences. And it's also an expectation for all of our teachers and core content to complete annual training, regardless of whether they have a GT student in their class or not. So we also are working on developing curriculum content and things that are accessed by not just GT students, but any student in a classroom who has that asynchrony that I mentioned earlier, that potential for needing a challenge, for added depth and complexity, some of those potentials that you see in a lot of learners. So we're trying to embed all these good things that really can be accessed by anyone.
Phenomenal, phenomenal. Cody, I'll tell you this, right? The College Board, I remember when I was a superintendent in the first 2 years, I defied the College Board AP, right? AP access or the percentage with that by 125%, right? So it completely disrupted it. And this was without, this is why I always say, Blake and Cody, I wish I had some of these tools that are being underscored and known about these tools, because it would have been much easier to have these conversations around dismantling systems. But Cody, AP and IB, where do we see this in 3 years?
Yeah, well, you know, I like that Blake talked about gifted identification as a lever, because a lever for change. You know, my work focuses on those secondary college readiness outcomes. So a lot of times I get to see the results of the good work that other people did, you know, previously up the line. What we're seeing in AISD is that identifying a broader array of students as gifted and talented is having an impact on our advanced secondary programming. So, for example, last year when we got our score reports and our participation reports back, our AP exam participation rate increased 50% among our Black students against a total district rate of 14%. So serious gains in participation there. 20% more Hispanic students took the AP exams last year than the year before, and they had a 4% score increase, average passing rate. So when you're seeing both program expansion, but program success rates go up, a lot of things are going in the right direction. So we're making gains in places where students are traditionally underrepresented and less successful than their white peers. We're seeing those opportunity gaps close in Austin ISD faster than they're closing in other places. So in 3 years, I would love to see that trajectory not only continue to move in that direction, but to increase because we are getting better at making those identification choices about informing our communities about what giftedness looks like, and then coaching those gifted students to challenge themselves to take those AP courses and to expand the program in communities and among students that it hasn't traditionally served.
Phenomenal, Cody. And I'll tell you this, right? Hearing those specific metrics coming out of AISD is just absolutely phenomenal. And to underscore that too, Cody, I'll tell you this, Cody and Blake, even though we increased access to AP by 125%, the failure rate remained the same based off of the control group data, exactly what Austin Independent School District is doing. Everybody is gifted if you provide them the opportunity, the access, the resources, and support. Cody and Blake, last question, and I can tell you guys are just like me. We like to talk, right? And this can be a five-hour conversation, but I'm only going to limit you to three words, okay? Now, people don't listen to me, but take this question as it is, Cody and Blake. What three words do you want today's audience to leave our podcast regarding AISD, the COGAT, potentiality, and ability for Generation Alpha and Generation Beta in the AC stage of education, which is after COVID-19?
Well, based on what you were just saying, I was thinking, is that everyone? But I'm going to change that to let them try. Because if you don't give them the chance, then they're never going to show you. But if you just let them try, get out of their way, get society out of their way, get traditional culture of public education out of their way, they'll show you what's possible.
It's kind of like the movie, A Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come.
That's right.
I got that feeling when you said, let them try. That field of
dreams. Almost like a challenge, right?
Exactly. Let them try. That is, Cody, it's going to be hard to follow.
Oh,
that.
I know. Blake called an audible, and now I don't know how to follow that up. But oh man, I want that to be our like believe or our every second counts. Now we need to put that up in the office, Blake. Let them try. That's great. Okay. So I was going to paraphrase Colin Seal with Think Law. He has the phrase, "Potential is distributed equally, opportunity is not." So I think our charge then in three words is distribute opportunities equally. It's not distribute resources equally. It's not, give everybody the same thing, but it's distribute opportunities equally. And I think that's a core of the work that we do.
And Colin is a great fraternity brother, a great alpha man. Love Colin. How you doing, good brother? Hope all is well. Hope you're listening. But let them try and distribute opportunity equally. Cody and Blake, thank you for coming on Voices for Excellence. I want to be able to turn it over to my friend really fast, Tony. Wow. I mean, I've heard high level, Tony, about the great success of Austin Independent School District. Tony, this conversation just got me jacked up. A, they're creating opportunity. They're saving lives, providing access. And I look at it from my lens, Tony, specifically from when through my K-12 education trajectory, I wish I had a Tony, a Kogat, a Cody, a Blake, a Dr. Segura leading this, because I think access would have been a lot easier for me. But Tony, just really fast, the great work that Riverside Insights is doing across the country and internationally.
I'll just close by saying we are extremely proud to partner with Austin ISD and the rewarding programs. They are doing outstanding work. So I feel very rewarded to work alongside Cody, Blake, and the entire Austin ISD team. You know, COGAT was originally published in 1968 as an instructional tool, to help drive instruction, and it still stands today as the premier strength-based ability solution and an outstanding multi-measure. I like to say we can all learn, just not the same way or the same day, and COGAT helps with that. So it's just, I'm super proud to be representing the product and working with Riverside and Austin ISD, and as well as many other partners. You know, Austin's demonstrated the work that the utility COGAT has across educational needs and programs. They also show how the data can be cross-sectioned across multiple disciplines in a school district, therefore increasing the return on the investment for a single solution. And I think that's very important. So I'll close by saying thank you again for the partnership. And if anyone would like any information about COGAT and our programs, please contact me at 210-800-1609, or you can email me at tony.castilleja@riversideinsights.com. So thanks again for allowing me to sit in on this.
Yeah. And Tony, thank you. Because like I said, I saw the initial data from Austin.
Outstanding.
And it was just absolutely outstanding. And Melinda, who is another part, someone that I just absolutely love and adore at Riverside Insights, was like, I have to share this story about Austin. And this is why, and to my audience. And this is why, Tony, also, I believe in Riverside Insights and a core partner with them is because of the fact that they're creating new conditions for kids that wouldn't have existed if the data wasn't there. So Cody, Blake, and Tony, thank you for coming on VFE and our Back to School series. Cody and Blake, I can't wait to hear more success stories coming out of Austin, Texas. And I have to get to a UT game, so make sure you have all that data coming in so I can get down there, see what's going on in Austin ISD, and see the number one team in the country play live.
We'd be glad to have you, Michael, yeah.
Thank you again, Blake, Cody, and Tony, for your time. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.